Morning. Hi. I know most of you. I'm just looking around. I'm Sarah Jane, or some people call me SJ, and my husband, Joe. We've got three little girls. We've been part of the Jubilee family for about 4 years now. So, first of all, happy Mother's Day. And it can be a very happy day, can't it? I got breakfast in bed and lots of sticky cards from the toddlers. You might have had a surprise visit home from an older child, or looking forward to lunch out with an elderly mum. Whatever you're doing, wish you a happy day. But as has been alluded to, Mother's Day can also be hard, can't it? So I just want to acknowledge that now, and sometimes like naming it is like part of acknowledging it, so that's what I want to do at the start. So there are those bringing up children as single mothers, and I have so much respect for those. My husband was away for 2 days this week. That was enough. So to the single mums out there, huge respect. There are those with strained relationships with their mums, those who are grieving and perhaps today re-grieving the loss of their mothers, those desperate to be mothers, struggling to conceive, and those who have lost pregnancies. So it's important to acknowledge that right at the beginning. And sadly, the reality is that some people actually will have stayed away from church today because it's Mother's Day. It's just too hard, isn't it? But interestingly, Mother's Day has not always been what our secular culture celebrates today. So today, it's about giving cards and presents to our mums. But actually, in the Middle Ages, they celebrated Mothering Sunday. We've sort of lost that in our culture a little bit. So today, I'm trying to sort of recapture a bit of that and think about what that means for us. So Mothering Sunday was a day when you would visit your mother church. And so your mother church is where you were perhaps baptized, where you were raised, or it would be the cathedral, which is like the mother church to your smaller church. And they would have these big processions back to the cathedral. So different, isn't it, to today? So today, it's about looking inwards, like into your little nuclear family towards your one mother figure. But Mothering Sunday is about looking outwards and about being part of a bigger community. And so I'm not saying it's wrong to celebrate Mother's Day at all. I think it's brilliant. But I think as the church, we've also got something else to celebrate. And that's what I really want to think about today. So I wonder where your mother church is. Someone asked you, what's your mother church? Where did you first come to faith? What's the church that first nurtured you? Looking around, probably some of those churches might be overseas. Some might not be in Maidenhead. So for me, my mother church, I think I've got a picture, is St. Luke's, Gampston and Bridgford in Nottingham. There it is. And that's where I grew up from the ages of 8 to 18. So a really significant decade, sort of as an individual, but also growing as a Christian. And it's where I was baptized by full immersion, under the water, age 17, in front of all my sixth form mates. Quite a significant day of saying, yes, this is what I choose. And it was a church in which I had several spiritual mothers, or spiritual mothers and fathers. So I've got some photos for you. This is Angie, and she was my youth worker. She was the first person who took me to Soul Survivor, a really big youth festival that used to happen every summer. And that was a hugely significant time. Well, each year it was significant, but that first one, when I first experienced worship in an auditorium of thousands and thousands of young people, it's just an incredible experience. And she was the person who took me to that and sort of helped me process that. Secondly, I've got Linda. You can just tell she's lovely, can't you, from her face? This is Linda, and I used to babysit for her and her husband, John, and they're exactly 10 years older than me. So they were that sort of life stage ahead, and they really modelled to me what a godly marriage was, really full of fun and laughter and honesty, and sort of paved a way for me to follow, really. And then thirdly, I've got Claire. And Claire sort of took risks with the young people in our church. It was great, wasn't it, to have the band with some young people. She was a real champion of young people in our church and got them involved, got them up front, kind of gave them a go. She gave me a go in the youth band until we kind of all agreed that my younger sister had the better voice. And then she became the singer. But she got me involved, and particularly doing summer holiday camps at our church. I've got a photo. This is 15-year-old me, dressed up as a pirate, doing a summer kids camp. Okay, my first kind of steps into leadership as a young adult. Hugely significant. So these were three people who cared for me deeply, who always took an interest in me, who had time to talk, to pray, to think through decisions, and to point me to Jesus. And so I'm so grateful for these spiritual mothers, and I know that my parents are too. So as we think about Mothering Sunday, this broader definition, we're thinking about what we sing in that kids' song. You and you and you and you, you and you and you and you. We're part of the family of God. That's it. So we sing it, and it's easy to sort of trot off the tongue. But we're kind of going to think about what that means today and how we enact that on Mother's Day, but also every day. So can I pray before we open our Bibles? Lord, as we open your word now, I pray that you would speak to us afresh. This topic that we kind of know about in our heads, I pray you would root it in our hearts, and that you would re-inspire us as to what it means to be your community of believers, to be a family of God in this place. And I pray, Lord, that each of us would leave here knowing that we have a role to play. Amen. Okay, so there's an account in three of the four Gospels of Jesus, and it goes a bit like this. Jesus was in the middle of teaching, and it said he had a crowd of people gathered round his feet. In fact, there were so many people around him that when his mum and his brothers came to talk to him, they couldn't get to him. He was so busy. So they sent a message through a messenger to go and get him. Imagine that awkward messenger having to interrupt Jesus mid-flow and say, "Sorry, Jesus, your mum's outside. She wants a word." And what does Jesus do? Does he tell the front row, like, "Move up, move up, we've got really important people coming"? No. Does he kind of finish quickly and then excuse himself and say, "Sorry, I've got to go. No. He does something quite shocking. And I remember reading this probably when I was about as old as that monkey costume, thinking, wow, did he actually do that? And having to read it again. You get some of those passages with Jesus, don't you? And you say, did he actually say that? So Matthew 12, 48, he replied to him, so this is to the messenger, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother." So Jesus uses this unexpected interruption to make a teaching point. And he asks this rhetorical question, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And I could just imagine being the messenger, being like, she's outside. It's her, it's Mary. But then he answers the question himself. And he says, anybody who follows God is adopted and is part of the family. I can imagine Mary later. I like to sometimes imagine the characters. Mary ruffling Jesus' hair saying, "You know, Jesus, sometimes it would just be great if you would just like listen to that fifth commandment." Doesn't it say like, listen to your mother? And then Jesus saying, "Oh, sorry, Mum, it's complicated when your father is in heaven." But in seriousness, it is an astonishing moment. He's saying, anybody who does the will of the Father, or in Luke's gospel, it puts it this way. It says, those who hear God's word and put it into practice are given the identity of mother and brother and sister to Christ himself. And isn't that what we're trying to do? We're all trying to hear the word and we're trying to put it into practice. So that's us. We get to be a brother and a sister and a mother to Jesus. And in fact, the Bible is so full of salvation analogies that revolve around this idea of family. See if you recognize some of these phrases. You have received a spirit of sonship, making you heirs with Christ. That's Romans 8. You have a glorious inheritance. That's a family thing, isn't it? About being passed down. It's Ephesians 1. You've been adopted into the family of God. Galatians 4. And even the phrase that we use about being born again, a born again Christian, it's about being born into a family. So all of these phrases are about having a new father, but with it comes the new family too. And in the West, we're often taught to explain the gospel in legal terms. I don't know how you were kind of taught to explain the gospel in a few sentences. That often we're taught to do it kind of legally, that Jesus has paid for our sins, he's taken the punishment and freed us from judgment. That's often a way the gospel is set out. And that is one of the kind of images from the Bible, that's right. But interestingly, it's not the most common one. So many would argue that a contemporary audience of Jewish listeners would have actually been a lot more likely to understand the gospel in familial terms, as a family. So you're justified by being baptized into this new family group, this group that now includes all races and all ethnicities. So faith is no longer something that's inherited by your bloodline, by being Jewish, but it's a community that's open to all, through which a new family is made. So it's a central gospel image, and it's something that Jesus himself talks about. So how do we live it out? So our main passage for today, if you want to find it, is 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. And it's kind of halfway through verse 7 to verse 12. Give you a second to find it. So a bit of context. It's another of Paul's letters. We've just finished one of Paul's letters. This is another of Paul's letters. And he's writing about 50 or so years after Jesus' death and resurrection. And he's writing to the church in Thessalonica, which is modern-day Greece. And he's reflecting on the time that he spent there. So this is after his visit with a very new community of Jesus followers. So it says, just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so that's Paul, Silas, and Timothy, so we have cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Surely you remember, brothers and sisters, our toil and hardship. We work day and night in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preach the gospel of God to you. You were witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. So Paul starts this passage by comparing his conduct, his behavior there, to that of a breastfeeding mother. Isn't that interesting? It's not really the first simile you would imagine Paul, who was notoriously single, to use, of a breastfeeding mum. But he chooses this feminine comparison to illustrate the absolutely relentless, compassionate, sacrificial care that he's poured out with these baby Christians. And like a mother, it's a care motivated by love. In verse 8, it says, we loved you so much, and you brought us delight. And I've got three littlies, five and under. So I've been breastfeeding on and off for 3 years of the past 5.5. It's a commitment that brings with it, yes, some delightful times, some really intimate times of bonding, but also it's absolutely exhausting. So verse 9, he talks about toil and hardship with interruptions night and day. I can say yes, it does. Yeah, it's hard work too when you have to relentlessly sort of respond to somebody above and yourself, whether you feel like it or not. And it's motivated by love. I could only do that, getting up all those nights, because I loved my daughter so much. And when we think about Jesus' most clear instruction, he says, love one another as I have loved you. That's John 13. Love one another as I have loved you. There's no more sacrificial love than that, is there? And he goes on to say, by this love, or by this, people will know that you are my disciples. So Jesus tells us that having a love that responds to other people's needs above our own is actually a marker of being a Christian. And I wonder, maybe Paul chose this breastfeeding analogy because he was remembering something in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah 49:15. It talks about God's compassion for Israel and how it's even stronger than that of a nursing mother. It says, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. It's a bit of an unusual way of saying it, but it's basically saying, imagine the strongest human bond you possibly can. Surely it's that of a mother and her newborn baby, okay? It's the strongest bond we can imagine, but even sometimes that fails. But God is saying, my love for you is even stronger. And just like a mother responds to the cries of her babies, I will always, on cue up there, I will always respond to your cries. So if we're to love one another like God has loved us, there is an element of sacrifice involved. A nursing mother doesn't just get the cozy cuddles. They also have to do the hard yards in the night. And so there's times when, if we're to do what verse 8 says, to share our lives together, then sometimes that will be inconvenient. There will be times when I just can't be bothered to go to life group. But I push through and I go anyway. Or there'll be times when someone needs to talk and, wow, they're talking for a long time. And I've got stuff I really need to do. But I'm going to stop and I'm going to listen. Or there's times when sharing life means sharing life with people in this community who we're not naturally friends with. When we led an Alpha course in London, we had this fantastically diverse group. It's the most diverse group I can ever think of. So we had people in their 20s who were in their very first jobs in London. We had people near retirement, the full spectrum. We had someone with a Cambridge PhD, and we had someone who left school at 16. We had someone in long-term unemployment, and we actually had a real millionaire. They hosted Christmas. But this group was just like thrown together, and we formed a life group out of it for the following couple of years, and it was phenomenal. But there were some quite surreal moments. There was this older guy in the group who we befriended, and he had a lot of time on his hands. He would often come round to our house for a cup of tea and a chat. And quite often he'd fall asleep on our sofa. Love him. And I was like, you know, in my early 20s, so awkward. I would run off to the kitchen and just busy myself washing up. And I remember thinking, as I was washing up, like, there is no other reason that I would have this random old man asleep on my sofa if we didn't both love Jesus. That is literally the thing we have in common. So, some applications. Some of us might be a bit envious of the close relationships we observe amongst others in the church. But if we're honest, how much do we share of ourselves? Vulnerably so. And how much do we join in? It's a challenge. If you're not in a life group, that's probably the main way you can form those relationships, week in, week out, sharing life. If you want to join one, there's a board there that shows all the groups. Find one, okay? Find one. Another way to integrate yourself is serving on one of the teams. There's loads of ways to get involved. People doing sound up there, doing the words for our music, being in the band, cooking meals when families have babies, helping at the youth group on a Thursday night. So many ways. And when we were new to this church, that's how we got to know people. I'm not from this place, I was brand new, but that's how we kind of got alongside people, and then those relationships grow. So if you feel like you're on the edge of this church family, I just really urge you, there are lots of ways to get involved, and you've got something to offer. And when I was preparing, I also felt God saying that some of us feel quite weary from giving out from ourselves and not really feeling like we've got much to show for it. And I got thinking about the nursing mother image, that nursing mother who knows her hours of care in the night will one day be worth it. And it might feel like hard work, but they carry on, motivated by love. And I felt God saying for those people to look at Galatians 6, which says, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers." There's that phrase again, the family of believers. So let's go back to our main passage in 1 Thessalonians 2. So it starts with this maternal image of the breastfeeding mother, and then he's sort of mixing all his language, isn't he? Then he talks about them as brothers and sisters, another family image. And then at the end, he uses a paternal comparison of a father. So verse 11, he says, "I dealt with each of them as a father deals with his children." So we've got this passage kind of bookended by mothers on one side and fathers on the other side. And I just thought we should say, I don't think he's saying anything gendered here. I don't think he's saying, women, you do this, and men, you do this, because he's talking about himself in both instances. He's just using these as pictures to help us think about what it means to be family together. So this is for men and women. And so there's three aspects he pulls out of fatherly love. He talks about encouraging, comforting, and urging them to live lives worthy of God. Encouraging, comforting, and urging. And all three are really just about wanting the best for that person, aren't they? They're about saying, I want to see you thrive. I want you to be the best that you can be for Jesus. And when there's sort of setbacks along the way, I will comfort you and I will urge you to carry on. I'll set high standards for you, like we do for our children. And we all need encouragement, don't we? Like, it's a long old race, the Christian life, and there's ups and there's downs. So we need one another to cheer each other on. And just as with the breastfeeding image, I said it was sometimes inconvenient. With the fatherly image, I think sometimes it can be uncomfortable. Inconvenient and uncomfortable. So our culture wants to privatize our faith, to say, like, you're free to believe what you want, but just kind of keep it to yourself. And this is quite different. This is saying, actually, your business is my business, because I'm going to speak into your life and urge you and encourage you and comfort you. So it clashes with something in our culture. And we've been through lockdowns, haven't we, as well? I think that plays into it. We've been through a few strange years where we've been taught to kind of keep ourselves to ourselves, you know, just look after your little family, that's where you're safe. There's some messages there that I'm sure have had some effect on us. And we have adjusted back to kind of normal, haven't we? But I wonder whether any of that lingers on. I have to check myself on this. Is my home as open as it was pre-lockdown? I'm not sure I fully have got back to that yet, actually. Is my home as open as it was? But if we want to have people who urge us to live a life worthy of God, we have to know each other's business. It only really works if there's that level of intimacy. So individualism says, you're free to do what you like, do what's best for you, and you can change your mind whenever. That's what culture says. So whether that's your job, your friendships, your marriage, if it's not working for you, quit. I was reading a bit of this book, I think it's going to come on the screen. It's a really interesting book called When Church Was a Family, and it's kind of looking at how societies have changed. And his main argument is this. He says, spiritual formation occurs primarily in the context of a community. But as a modern cultural norm, what social scientists called radical American individualism, well, I'm sure we could replace American with British, extends itself, many Christians grow lax in their relational accountability to the church. Faith threatens to become an I, not an us, a my God, not an our God concern. So he's basically saying that the way we do faith is not as the early church did it. And if you think about, we talk about our personal relationship with Jesus, don't we? And he's saying it shouldn't just be a personal relationship with Jesus. So some provocative questions. When I attend church on a Sunday, or life group, or the tent, what are my motivations for going? Am I going for the benefit of my personal relationship with Jesus? Or do I show up because these are my people and we walk this together? Do I expect other people who are there to contribute towards my spiritual growth? And do I expect myself to contribute to theirs? You might be thinking, okay, SJ, it's all right for Paul, because he was like the leader of the early church. And I can see some people here are spiritual parents. Joelle is a great spiritual mother to many of us. And Ben and Stuart, they pastor us, so they're really good at encouraging and comforting and urging. But like, I'm just me, and I don't know that much about the Bible. And no one's going to look up to me that way. Well, I want to encourage you with a phrase that I heard in a sermon in my teens, probably when I was the same age as I was doing those kids' camps. And the phrase was this: everyone is a shepherd from the front and a sheep from behind. Everyone is a shepherd from the front and a sheep from behind. That phrase has stuck with me since I was a teenager, because it means that I can look up to other people, but also there will be people looking up to me. And it's quite empowering to tell a 13-year-old that they can disciple other people too. And there might be people who've not heard that, that we're all to disciple one another. So the gospel is fundamentally a call to relationship with our Father, isn't it? But in doing so, we gain this huge family of faith, of brothers and sisters. And it's been great to see us kind of come out of lockdown and learn to do life together again. People praying for one another on a Sunday. The life groups back together in person, supporting one another. Jubilee is a beautiful family to be part of. And I want to encourage us today to be the best family we can. So to ask of God, who might you be wanting me to encourage today? Who needs comfort? And who could I urge? Who could I spur on? I started by telling you about my mother church, about St. Luke's in Gampston. And for a lot of our young kids and teenagers out there, this is going to be their mother church, isn't it, one day? This is the place where we pray they'll come to faith and they'll be nurtured. So I just want to paint a picture to end, a picture of what that could be. So won't it be brilliant one day if they are able to say, yes, this was a place where there were so many significant people. People who nurtured me in my faith, who loved me like a nursing mother, who cared for me above and beyond their own needs, who loved me sacrificially and modeled the love of God. That there are people there who were my cheerleaders, who encouraged me, who comforted me, and pushed me on towards Jesus. And when I come back from the town I've moved to, from university, from college, wherever they've gone, when I come back, it feels like I'm home. Isn't that what we want for our kids? Brill. So I was thinking how we could sort of respond today. And I showed you at the beginning three of my spiritual mothers. I want to give you some space to think about who has been significant in your faith journey, to think back. Who are those people who are not your biological parents, but who have sort of mothered, fathered, loved and encouraged you? And I've got some cards here. There's a card and then a matching coloured envelope. So to take one and to write a card. Okay, so a card today, not just for our birth mothers, but a card for our spiritual mothers and fathers, and to just to write, thank you, this is how you were significant in my life. And then you might want to take that home and post it, or you might want to copy what you've written and text it, because we don't send letters as much. But to do that as an act of thanking someone, and then to think after that, well then, in our church, what's my role for that? Does that sound good? So if you're upstairs, there's some cards up near the sound desk, so you don't have to track down. If you're downstairs, there's some cards here. Maybe you could put some music on in the background. And just have a few minutes to think about that. Who has been significant for you in the family of God?